This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on October 21, 2025 in Goshen, Indiana.
Lessons from a prodigal martyr. I'm sure you all know the story that Jesus told about the prodigal son who walked away from home and wasted his father's resources. Have you ever wondered what that man looked like? Well, now you know, because that's me. I'm the prodigal marketer. And for many years, money and business was my idol. But God brought me down to the husks. And while I'm thankful, extremely thankful, that the Father has welcomed me back into his house, in many ways, I'm still walking the road home. And you know, we're all prodigals. That's what the Bible says. We've all sinned. But the Father wants us home again. And so this morning, if you can take one step closer home to the Father's house, then our time together will have been worthwhile. But it's not just me that needs to return to the Father's house. My business needed to come home to the Father's house as well. And it's not just my business, but my industry as a whole, the marketing industry is a prodigal industry. There's a lot of marketing that happens in our world today that is more focused on filling the shareholder's back pocket than it is on ensuring the consumer's best interest. And what we want to do is learn how to put the consumer's best interest first. And when that's done in a healthy environment, then the shareholder's back pocket can also be taken care of. I have really appreciated the topics that we heard already today. And if you're listening to this on recording, I would encourage you to find As We Have Therefore Opportunity by Paul Devon Hostetler and Right People, Right Seats by Roger Weaver, because this topic really builds on that platform but will focus on the marketing and sales side of the business. I don't know how many of you think of yourselves as marketers. How many of you here think of yourself as a marketer? All right, a few in the room. How many of you think of yourselves as salespeople? All right, a few more. Okay, all you salespeople, you're marketers. Sales is part of marketing. And in fact, marketing touches every single aspect of the business. And sometimes people say to me, well, you know, we don't really do any marketing. But what they don't realize is that if you are selling something, then you're marketing, because that's what marketing is. Well, worldly prodigal marketing is selfish. It is selfish. It leverages lies and empty promises. It revels in pride and vanity. It breeds greed and discontentment. It exploits the masses, and it wastes resources. But big time marketing companies don't want you to know that. They don't want you and all the other consumers to know the damage that they're doing to society to fill their own pockets. Who is the largest marketing company in the world? Anyone want to guess? All right, Walmart, Google, eBay. All right, well, Google is the one. Let's see, am I going the wrong way? I am. Google. What I'm about to show you is a real screenshot. In 2024, Google's revenue from advertising was $265 billion, with a B, $265 billion. And in my original preparation for this keynote over a year ago now, I asked this question to Google: how marketing is hurting people? It looks like there aren't many great matches for your search. Now, to be fair, I did some other searches that did yield some results. But this is an important topic because we care about our influence on people. Grayson Pope, in an article titled "The Dilemma of Christian Marketing," says, "Marketing originated out of the need to let the public know about a product or service that one truly believed in. Today, however, much of marketing has become an art form of trying to seduce the public into thinking they can't be happy without a particular good or service." There's no doubt about it that marketing is powerful. For centuries, the devil has been using the husks of worldly marketing to twist people's values and beliefs. And so from inscriptions on Roman walls for brothels and gladiator shows to the mass media advertising of the 20th century in radio, television, and newsprint, even to our very day where digital marketing and smartphones are ever present, this influence continues to escalate. And each one of us in this room has an opportunity to bear on that influence, either in a positive or in a negative way. And so many thoughtful Christians may wonder, is marketing inherently wrong? Maybe you've questioned that. Can we even do marketing that honors God? Am I proud if I make grand statements about my company or my products? Is it possible to market in a way that honors God? Or could marketers ply their craft in a way that actually stems the tide of consumerism and decadence? Is it possible for marketing to be a genuine blessing to people? I want to take us back to the bedrock foundation. But before we look at that foundation, I want to tell you where we're going today. I want to remind you, first of all, what this foundation is. And this is not new to you. You all know it very well. But we're going to remind ourselves of the foundation. And then I want to look at five biblical principles, pillars, if you will, that rest on the foundation. And we can use these pillars to evaluate the marketing that we're doing to ensure that we're building our marketing on a biblical foundation so that we can honor Christ and build the kingdom in the way that we market. And this will bring our marketing closer home to the Father's house. And at the end, I want to give you an opportunity to practice applying these five principles. So pay attention so you can do well on your practice. So what would you say is the foundation underlying all biblical principle? What is it at the bottom of it all? Well, Jesus gave us the answer one time when a lawyer asked him a question. And the lawyer said this. He said, "Master, which is the great commandment in the law?" He wanted to know which one commandment was the greatest. And Jesus said to him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment." Now, the lawyer probably expected him to stop there because the lawyer asked for the one great commandment. But Jesus didn't stop with one. He said, "And the second is like unto it." Like unto in the Greek actually means equal. The second is equal. There's not just one great commandment. There's actually two, Mr. Lawyer. "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." On these two hang all the law and the prophets. All right? And then, just like Paul told us this morning, Jesus gave the story of the Good Samaritan because this lawyer didn't really like to have a neighbor. But we have neighbors, and we want neighbors. That's why we're here, right? That's what the kingdom of God is about. It's about being neighbors to our neighbors. How do we do that in our marketing? So the foundation is love. The foundation of all biblical marketing is love. Without the foundation of love, we will not be serving God in our business. We need the foundation of love. Marketing needs to return from selfishness to the Father's love. I'm going to be giving you some questions that you can ask to evaluate your marketing. And I'd like for you, if you'd write them down, because they're helpful questions. And the foundational question is this: is the result of this interaction in the other person's best interest? That's the foundational question in marketing. Is the result of this interaction in the other person's best interest? Marketing needs to return from selfishness to the Father's love. Is the result of this interaction in the other person's best interest? About 20 years ago, 25 years ago maybe now, Rosewood was a young, growing business. And I was at the point where I had figured out kind of what our niche was, and I knew what a good customer looked like. One day, as I was out cold calling to grow the business, knocking on doors, I walked into this company, struck up a conversation, and as I walked through the shop and came out to the staging area where they had things ready on pallets for shipping, everything was a buzz. The machinery was humming, employees were busy, staging area was stacked with pallets ready to go out. And from the conversation, I said to myself, this is the right opportunity. This is a good customer for us. We're going to do business together. And so as a man I'll call Willie and I talked together, he agreed that we should do a catalog project. And we did. We pulled out all the stops. We did all new photography. We did a number of lifestyle settings. We shot individual products. We wrote product descriptions for the catalog, completely redesigned the catalog, and printed 10,000 copies and delivered them to Willie. It was less than a year later when I found out through the grapevine that Willie was out of business. And I said, what? Willie's out of business. So as I learned more about what happened, what I came to find out is that Willie's decision to invest all those dollars into this catalog was actually a last-ditch effort to save his company. And I thought, if I would have only known that, I would have never sold Willie that project, because I knew that this project is not going to save a failing company. But you know what? Why didn't I know that? Because I didn't care enough. I didn't care enough to find out what Willie really needed. When we market God's way, we care enough to make sure that we're really helping the customer. And I made a decision in that moment that if I could help it, this would never happen again. Because business failure is tragic. It's tragic for the business owner, it's tragic for his family, and for his employees, and for their families. And so what we do in marketing matters. Well, let's take a look at the first pillar. The first pillar that we want to build on the foundation of truth is, or the foundation of love, is truth. Proverbs 11:1 says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Marketing needs to return from leveraging lies and empty promises to the Father's truth-telling. Did you ever stretch the truth to make a sale? Did you ever promise a delivery deadline that you weren't quite sure if the team could actually pull it off? Maybe you're one of those enterprisers that we heard about. I don't know about you, but a lot of times when I would read this verse, somehow only the first part would sink in. A false balance is abomination to the Lord. I want you to notice the second part of this verse. It says, but a just weight is his delight. You need to know that when you're doing fair business, God is up in heaven and he is smiling down on you. God is delighted when you do fair business. It matters. Right? Know that. Business is good. Business provides an opportunity for us to love our neighbors. And when we do fair trade, God is delighted. Some years ago, our oldest daughter was in the market for a car. And even though she was a girl, she was very clear on what she wanted in a car. She wanted a Honda. It had to be a Honda Accord. And it had to be a manual transmission. And because she was fairly young and didn't have a lot of savings, there was a budget. Because this dad has some requirements about how children pay for things that they want. And so I said, well, I'm not sure that we're going to find what you're looking for with the amount that you can spend. But we went on a search. And don't you know, online we found a Honda Accord manual within her budget, but it was in Virginia, about a four-hour drive from our house. So I said, all right, well, the pictures on the website were very tiny, and I couldn't really see what the shape of the car was, right? It wasn't a brand new car, so I know it was used to some extent. So I decided, well, I'm going to place a call, and I'm going to find out a little bit more about this car. And so I'm on the phone with the gentleman, and I said, I can't really tell what the body is like and the paint and all. I said, is it clean? And, oh, yeah, it's clean. And, you know, any scratches anywhere? Oh, no, it's beautiful. Not a scratch on the car anywhere. All right, well, you're about 4 hours away. How about if we would show up tomorrow, say 11, 1130, something like that? Oh, yeah, that'd be great. We'll be ready for you. All right. So about 11:30 the next morning, we pull into the car lot, and sure enough, they have this concrete circle right out there front, and right there on the concrete circle was sitting the Honda Accord. So we parked, got out, and I went right over here, and so I started walking around the car, and I got to the passenger's door. Actually, the first one I saw was on the front right fender. I said, oh, there's a scratch. He told me this was a clean car. Got to the passenger's door, and down at the rocker panel, there was a scratch this long that was to the metal. And I thought, what? Till I got around that car, there was a scratch on every single panel on that car. I was not a happy camper. Well, shortly a salesman came out, and he greeted me very cheerfully and wanted to do a deal. And I said, I have a little problem. I said, I was told that this car is clean. It doesn't have any scratches. And he was a very highly trained salesman. So I said, well, I eventually realized that I'm going to get nowhere with this person. And so he agreed at my request to go in and talk to the manager. Well, we no more than got inside the door, and they had one of these pull-up banners there. So AF has some of these. You pull them up, and it says paper banner. And it had 10 things about why you should buy a car here. But at the very bottom of this banner, right, very bottom one, there was one that had a special star. You want to guess what that word said? Integrity. We need to tell the truth, right? We need to tell the truth. This can come out in product comparisons. Do you tell the truth about your product and how it compares to competing offers? there might be some ways in which your product doesn't really stand up in certain applications as well as your competitor's product does. Will you tell the customer that? Will you exhibit it that way? Here's your question for truth telling. How would the customer feel if they knew everything that I know? How would the customer feel if they knew everything that I know? Marketing needs to return from leveraging lies and empty promises to the Father's truth-telling. I want you to know these five biblical principles so that you can build your marketing on a biblical foundation. How would the customer feel if they knew everything that I know? That's your truth test. Well, the second principle is humility. Philippians 2:3 says that we should let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Is it possible to promote your business without boasting? Marketing needs to return from reveling in pride and vanity to the Father's humility. Here's something else that's worth writing down. Humble marketing replaces haughty statements about how great we are with helpful explanations about how the customer will benefit. See, it's not about us. That's not where the focus should be. It's not about the awards we've won or what we've accomplished, but it's how will this benefit the customer? Humble marketing replaces haughty statements about how great we are with helpful explanations of how the customer will benefit. And I want to show you a quick example of that. Here's the number one shed builder, third consecutive annual award. It doesn't really help the customer. Sheds for sale. Well, that at least gives us some information and doesn't sound too braggy, but it's not very helpful. But we might want to say, tired of clutter? Get organized with a new shed. This is helpful. Humility. We need to be humble and curious to deeply understand the customer's needs and wants. Here's your question for humility. Who is at the center of my marketing message? My company or my customer? Who is at the center of my marketing message? My company or my customer? The third principle is the principle of contentment. Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of things which he possesseth." And I want to spend a little extra time here because this is a really important one. Marketing needs to return from breeding greed and discontent to the contentment of the Father's house. Where is the line between covetousness and positive change? Where's the line between inspiring positive change versus driving unhealthy covetousness? You know, some worldly advertisements state or imply that owning their products will make you happy. But we know that true happiness, true joy, only comes from a loving relationship with God, our Heavenly Father, and with the people around us, our neighbors. That's where true joy comes from, not from buying another gadget. Shupam Pal, in an article titled The Side Effects of Marketing, states that marketers employ sophisticated techniques to create desire and convince consumers that their lives will be improved by purchasing a particular product. This can lead to the development of unrealistic expectations and a sense of inadequacy among individuals who may feel compelled to constantly consume in order to achieve happiness or social acceptance. Be honest with me today. How many of you felt that pressure? Yeah, it's real. The pressure is real. Here's an example. I love Toyota. It's my favorite brand of vehicles. Gene Kilbourne says this about this ad. The ad says, "The dream begins as soon as you open the door for a Toyota RAV4." And you can see this is dated. But here's what she says. If this were an ad for alcohol, the dream begins as soon as you open the bottle, or other addictive product, perhaps we would understand what a dangerous message this is. She notes that much of advertising relies on fantasy, fantastic constructions, or an appeal to the wish to escape everyday life. She goes on to say that both addictions and advertising offer us the promise of a much more exciting and glamorous and colorful life instantly via a substance or a product. They offer us an escape, not only from pain, but also from boredom and from the horror of being ordinary in a culture that equates ordinary with failure. Advertising for many products, not just addictive one, often reinforces and normalizes the addict's belief that life is dull and unpleasant and needs to be escaped. Consumption promises to fill an aching void, hence the attempt to surround commodities with an aura of romance, with allusions to exotic places and vivid experiences, close quote. Here's another example. What is this billboard telling you? Well, Coke is synonymous with success in baseball. Coke creates happiness. Baseball players drink Coke. And if you want to feel good like this young man, drink a Coke. And if you're really an American, Coke is as American as baseball. Do you see the messages in this ad? It's subtle, isn't it? But it's powerful. Christopher Lash says that by connecting the powerful images of a deeply desired social life with commodities, Coke in this instance, the advertisers thereby create the cruel illusion that one is possible by the purchase of the other. You cannot buy what you really want. You just can't buy it. So again, some worldly advertisements imply that owning their products will make you happy. But we know that true joy only comes from a relationship with our Heavenly Father and a loving relationship with our neighbors. Here's your question for contentment. How might this advertisement incite covetousness? How might this advertisement incite covetousness? Fourthly, we're going to look at service. Ephesians 4:28 says, "Let him that stole steal no more, rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." Now, I shouldn't assume you're like me, but for years when I read this verse, I thought about almsgiving or giving to a charitable organization. But as far as I know, when Apostle Paul wrote this verse, there wasn't anything like a 501c3. And I would like to offer you an alternate look at this verse. "Rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." In business, this is what we should be doing. We should be laboring with our hands so that when we do a transaction with a customer, there's margin in there to give to him that needs, so that when we deliver the product or complete the service, maybe it's worth $2,000 to the customer, but we only charge them $1,000. There's benefit in there. Our businesses, our daily labor should be adding value to society. It shouldn't just be a break even or, worse yet, a deficit, but we should be contributing to the benefit of society. Look for ways to genuinely help the customer. I'm going to give you a quick example. One of the ways to really help a customer is to give them some assurance and guidance in their journey. This is a screenshot from a brand named Finch that we serve as a customer at Rosewood Marketing. And you can't see it here on the screen, but you can choose your colors here. And people can visualize, they can actually see their color choices in action. This was a huge barrier for shoppers before we had this tool. Well, we just can't picture, what would these two colors look good together? Or, well, would this fabric fit with this color combination? Well, now they can see it. And we've turned it into a 3D, three-dimensional picture, so they can rotate it any which way and see what it looks like underneath, on top, and on the side. This is a service. It's a benefit to the consumer because it takes a lot of worry and friction out of the buying process. Just a quick example. Amazon also has a tool. I don't know what you think of Amazon, but I like what they're doing with this comparison of their products. So when I'm considering buying a particular product, they will show me several other products that I could compare, and maybe there's a better one than the one that I'm looking at right now. Here's your question for service. Does it make it easy for the customer to make the next decision? Does it make it easy for the customer to make the next decision? And of course, that's a decision that's in the best interest of the customer, right? Does it make it easy for the customer to make the next decision? Marketing needs to return from harming and stealing others to the service of the Father. The final principle is the principle of stewardship. And I'm just going to give you one example of stewardship, which I happen to believe, because of our experience with working with dozens of Anabaptist businesses. I'm only going to give you one thing here because I'm hoping that if I give you one, you'll actually go do it. Test and measure the investments that you make in marketing to see which ones are working and which ones are not. John Wanamaker said that, "I know half of my advertising dollars are wasted, I just don't know which half." You might not be able to learn where every single nickel went and what the return on that was. But if you can figure out at least where half of your dollars are at work, you will be much further ahead. But it takes effort, and it's challenging to figure this out, but it's worth the effort, because there's hundreds and thousands of dollars that are wasted because we don't test and measure our results. Please be a good steward. Here's your opportunity. You probably already have seen the questions in your book, and you've been adding some to that. The question for stewardship is, how well can you test and measure results? How well can you test and measure results? I'd just like to give you a minute and look at this ad on the screen. Are mounds of dishes stealing your family time? Less cleanup, more family time. Shop ScrubHub for your ideal dishwasher. So take a look at the questions in your handout and just evaluate this ad. What do you think? Does this ad pass the test? Does it pass the test of truth, humility, contentment, service, stewardship? I do teach some Anabaptist financial marketing workshops, and when we get into a discussion like this, with an example like this, it's really, really fun, because there's a lot of different perspectives, and it usually gets pretty loud. And my purpose is not to answer all the questions, but my purpose is to get us thinking, to start the conversation, and to really contemplate, what is the influence that I'm having in my marketing? I want to close with a quick little story. Some years ago, I was helping our oldest son get started in the rental real estate business, and both of us were pretty new. I had a little bit of experience before that, but our realtor's name was John. And so if you've ever done anything in real estate, you know that you got to cycle through a lot of properties that are on the market before you actually get one that's worth going to look at. And so we were going through these properties, and you know, days were going by and weeks were going by. And one day this listing came over from John, and Brunel and I were looking at this, and wow, this is the one. The numbers were right, it's the right area, everything's looking good. So Brunel and I are driving out, and we park there, and John, in good old John fashion, he's just a very calm guy. He's leaning over the hood of his pickup. Brunel and I come walking across the street, and John says, I'm telling you, you don't want to buy this property. Wow. We were coming to buy. Like, we were convinced this was the one. And I'm like, really? What? Why not? What? John said, come in. Let me show you. And John took us through that property and pointed things out to us that we would for sure have missed. And John unsold us that house. That's how you build your marketing on a biblical foundation. Thank you.